Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. As if. And I am deeply grateful to be with you on this 13th day of February 2021 as we take a look at thinking without thoughts. Or thoughts without thinking. It can go either way. And I was kind of thinking, as it were, how not to teach you how to think, but maybe teach you a little bit of how to not think. And maybe that will help you a little bit in your life. It sounds kind of paradoxical, but all great truths are very paradoxical, I have found. And they don't jive with human intellect and all of that. So let's take a deep look at what it means to think without thinking, just for a moment. There is a part of you that lives suppressed by your emotions and your psychology. This part of you that lies suppressed in all of this is the production manager of the Emperor of All Malice. This emperor inside of all of us has been allowed to do whatever it wanted, whenever it wanted, however it wanted. So it produces all sorts of thoughts from your basic emotional nature. And most people think from emotion. And then there are those who try to think from logic and reasoning. You have two kind of camps. And some people try to combine the emotions with logic and reasoning. And as they do, they come up with a conglomeration of crazy ideas and beliefs and theories and fantasies. All sorts of things come up, which is why the political structure of our country is the way it is, because everybody is making up stories that appeal to the emotionality of us as well as the sinister part of our thinking. So we like all of this. It gives us a form of entertainment, yada da yada da. But once you understand that there is another way to go about the process of awakening, this process of awakening, if you're even at all interested in it, is extremely important, because what it does is it allows you to have a new vista, a new way of looking at the bigger picture of your entire life, your whole life. You start to understand that there is a way to experience something that is beyond the premonitions of fear and hate and anger that the human mind likes to get involved in, which dredges up emotionality. So we make ourselves highly emotional, and then we start thinking from that emotionality, and we miss our entire life and the meaning of our life. And what can you say about that? Well, most people just don't care. They just don't care. They don't care that they miss their life. They really don't. They'll say they do, but they really don't. So our questions today are kind of based on this premise. The first one comes from Gene. Gene does not tell me where he or she lives. How does one think without thinking, as you spoke of in a commentary? I don't know how, Gene, I don't know how you got my commentary. That's interesting, because you're not on the list. So you must have gotten it from somebody who was and all of that. So you want to know, how does one think without thinking? A commentary, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is something I do twice a month. They're very involved. They're about the spiritual practice. They're about the pitfalls and the beauties and the dynamics of what it means to be in an authentic spiritual practice and what it means to live in a way that is beyond contemporary. It's about the immortal part of us. And if you're ever interested, you can subscribe to it, or you can become a sponsor, and sponsors get them for free. So I hope that you're interested in this. These commentaries, and Gene, I need to say this as a kind of a preamble to this, are not for everyone. They're not for the average person who is just kind of curious or is philosophical or has a set philosophy, whatever, that won't help. This is for someone who is really on the path, somebody who is trying to do something different with their life. And how does one think without thinking? The first step is in self-observation. You have to watch. You have to learn how to sit and watch your thoughts go by without engaging them in any kind of liking or disliking. If you can give up liking and disliking, that's the major thing. If you can give that up and just sit and watch your thoughts go by for, let's say, 2 minutes, if you can even do that. You have to work up to this. It takes practice. You have to work up to it and start to see what thoughts are preeminent in your mind. And then as you go along with this, you're soon going to find where those thoughts come from. And that is even more interesting. So you're sitting there watching these thoughts kind of float on by. Think of your mind as the sky and your thoughts as clouds. That's how we use it in Zen. And just watch. Watch how it goes by. And as you sit there and watch, you will be lured into the idea of judging yourself or judging the thoughts or worrying about where they came from or what the quality of them are. Some you will be attracted to. And I think you will be surprised at the ones you're most attracted to, because oftentimes those are dark, sinister thoughts and we like them. That's why we go to the movies, and that's why we see, you know, the crap we see, and we fill our minds with it. And soon you will start to have maybe a decent respect for your own thoughts. And if you do, if you can develop a decent respect for your thoughts, you're going to understand what I mean when I say you didn't take care of your mind. People don't take care of their mind. They might take care of their physicality, their hair color, their makeup, their body. They rip those abs and all of that stuff. But the real important thing to take care of is the state of your mind, how it is postured within you. So, Gene, if you're going to look at the way you live your life, you're going to have to understand that our thoughts are preeminent in that. Our thoughts are the ones that guide and direct us. Wherever your thoughts are pointed towards, generally speaking, that's the flow of your life. So when you're watching these thoughts, you're going to begin to understand deeply, oh, this is why my life is going in this direction. Now you got to ask yourself, am I doing this or are the thoughts doing it? Have I let my mind go to such a degree that my thoughts just go unconscious, and I'm just following them like a robot? I don't even know what they are, the quality of them, whether or not they're leading me where I would like to go or I can go, and all of that stuff. So when you start to understand the nature of your thoughts, the quality of them, you are beginning a process of self-examination. And this can be tricky, because then you can get involved in the idea of, I can't do this, I don't want to do this. You will be betraying, believe it or not, your genetic heritage. Inside of you are all the people that made up your body. All the even past lives are in your body memory, in the cells of your body. All of that is contained within you, all of it. And so now you're stepping back and you're starting to see the mental abuse you have caused yourself by assuming thoughts were right or appropriate or that you deserve them or whatever. Then you will start to realize that all of this was based on the idea of survival. And you will go to your DNA and you will start to understand how DNA thoughts incite fear, panic, feel easily threatened, which will then go to your genetic nature and start creating bias, prejudice. And this goes on and on. All of this stuff that I'm talking to you about, this genetic and watching and all that, this goes undetected by most of us. We go most of our life never knowing why we think the way we do, from where and which we do think, and how that has affected our entire life, guiding us, directing us our entire life to this, that, and the other, making up our life. The fate of our life and the destiny of our living is based in the gaps, the pauses, the spaces between our thoughts. And if you can learn how to move into those gaps, those pauses, those spaces between your thoughts, and just exist there without judging, without trying to make up some kind of story or make up some kind of belief or make up some kind of ideal, if you can just sit and watch, wanting nothing with all of your heart, just watching, something will arise in you. You will find something, I don't know what to even call it. It's intelligence. It's the veracity of kindness. It is a generosity. You will start seeing yourself in consciousness. You will have attained to consciousness. And that, my friend, dear Gene, is what it's all about. If you can attain to consciousness, you will awaken deeply to love. Gene, I hope that helped you. And if not, listen to this over and over, or come to the website at aspire.org, and there's a section there you can read about meditation, and you can go there and learn. And then maybe work upon yourself. And if you need help, you can always, always call me. Always, always know that. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from Janice. Where is the logic in a spiritual practice? I just don't seem to see it. Janice. Well, dear, there is no logic in a spiritual practice. There is no reasoning. Logic and reasoning belong to my mentality, my ego, my mind, my mental acuity, and it becomes the acumen of my entire life. And then when I have that, then I think I've got the tiger by the tail, and I don't. I just don't. People like to believe they know and they understand and they get it and all that other good stuff, but that's really not true. So what is it? What are we doing here? A spiritual practice, an authentic one, does not make sense. It does not coincide with the logic and reasoning of my mental acuity. It just doesn't do that. It is beyond all of that. There is experiences, direct experiences that we gain through meditation that bring us to the forefront of enlightenment, of awakening. So when I am no longer thinking about thinking, when I don't care anymore about the thoughts and how they populate inside of my mind, then I come to a place where, like I said to Gene, I can have consciousness. Meditation is not ridding yourself of your mind. It is understanding the nature of the mind. It is the ability to see how it functions and from where it functions. And it's usually and typically from two places: the emotionality of our DNA and the genetics, the logic and reasoning of our genetics that sustain the way we're going to act and react in this world. Most of us just don't understand this. We can't comprehend it. It's too hard. And it would invoke a lot of change. There is always this crazy assumption that people have about meditation. And it's this crazy assumption that if they meditate, they'll become so passive, so, you know, without, shall we say, aggression, motivation, whatever you want to call it. Intent will replace motivation. You start to understand how crazy it is to assume anything, and people get very superstitious and think, well, I won't be able to go to work. I won't be able to think. I'll be a vegetable. You won't be a vegetable. You're already a vegetable. Believe me, you are. You're a pawn of all sorts of things in this world, and some of them are assumptions and presumptions that you have within yourself. Your enemy, your real enemy is within you. Just like in our country, our real enemy is ourselves. So when Khrushchev said in the 60s, we will overcome you without firing a shot, he knew what he was talking about. He knew human nature, and it is true. You and I are our own worst enemy. So when I use logic and reasoning to propagate my ideas, which are typically assumptions, I'm very assumptuous in my thoughts when I get into them, and I start to create an assumptive mentality, shall we say, then I start to assume that I'm always right and that I know what's going on. And the interesting thing is, you can color anything in your life the way you want to see it, logically and with reason, but that doesn't make it that color. It just means I have colored in the ideas and the beliefs and the assumptions, and I've said, there it is, it's real. You know, the story I gave last week about putting the arrow in the tree and painting the bullseye around it and then considering myself a great archer. That's the way most people live their life. That's the way they treat their thinking. So they have all of this input. And if you're highly emotional, you're going to find you're a weaker person. You can't sustain any space or gap in your mind, a mind that is without thinking right and wrong, good and bad. You can't sustain that. You're going to find it very difficult to deal with that, because the emotions are going to come up and say, well, what about this? And what about that? What if we do this? And I would. And then the fear comes in. I'll be alone for the rest of my life. That kind of thing. And if you really achieve what I'm talking about, being alone is not so bad. You actually like your own company. But logic and reasoning would tell you, oh no, you'll be alone. You'll die on your deathbed without anybody there. So, you know, like, so what are they going to do? What does it mean? You want a crowd around you to adorize you, to give you the adoration you think you so deserve before you die, and that's going to make it easier? That's mishigas. That's craziness. But people like to believe that, and it's logical and reasonable for them to do it. More illogic and more unreasonable behaviors have come out of the logic and reasoning of people who are doing nothing but polishing their fears and their anger. We say in Zen, polishing the turd. We just love doing it. And that's the way we think. We're rationalizing our evil. And for the most part, if you look at your mind, really look at your mind, you will see you are polishing turds all day long. You are rationalizing your mischief, your evil, and it goes on and on and on in many different ways through logic and reasoning. Now, when you're curious about what's beyond the polishing of the turd and the reasoning of the mind and the logic, and you wonder, I wonder if there's another shore. I wonder if there's another place I could go. You would be right about that, but will you do it? Well, that's the key. Will you do it? You have to experience it. Now, here's where motivation comes in. You can't be motivated by logic and reasoning. Your intent must be for the sake of discovery, of moving beyond the common mind. Think about how ugly it is to think in terms that you never changed in this world, that your body changed, it got old on you, that times change, the way people think have changed. It's just a different form of anger and hatred, all, you know, relined up and repackaged. You know, it's just nothing ever really changes here. But the more you think about, I didn't mature. I didn't get beyond my thoughts. I didn't get beyond my emotions. I just didn't do it. Because you were so busy trying to have fun and get what you wanted. I say this to everyone, and I say it to you, dear. Live for those things you can take with you through death. Nothing else matters. Please forgive me. Namaste. The last question comes from Jill in Santa Ana, California. She tells me, thank you, Jill. Where do thoughts come from? Generally, it is from our emotionality. There are thoughts we have that come from our body memory that we've had for many, many lifetimes in this world. And then a lot of them come from our genetic acuity, which is our mental form of acuity, where we sit and analyze and theorize the emotions that are coming from our DNA, fight or flight emotions. And so we have these emotions that are always, and if you can remember this, it will help you. They're always being threatened. Always. Your and my whole life as a human being, as the animal, is based on survival and the comfort of survival. That's all we care about. Survival, survival, survival. We don't go any further than that. We don't want to go any further than that. We just want to survive as long as we can. I've had students and friends and people in hospice that were dying. And, you know, before they go, we chat, we talk. And I say, well, why do you want to stay alive as long as you possibly can? When you haven't done anything in this world, you haven't done anything but breed a child or make money, and that's as far as you've gone. You didn't go into the core of yourself. You never found your soul. You never developed a soul. You never developed a path to it, which is what this real thing is all about the achievement of moving from a human body to a soul. And people like to tell you, oh, you already have a soul. No, you don't. No, you're a soulless person until you walk the path to the soul. And then you become something else. So, where do our thoughts come from? Impressions, fears, the morbidness of our DNA, our ruthless survival, basically our emotions. Our emotions come up with a subject matter, and then the genetics take over and create the detail work of our thoughts, and we just obsess and compulse on that for the remainder of our living. And that's as far as we go. We don't go any deeper. We don't want to go any deeper. Our logic and our reasoning won't take us to a place where, oh, this would be important because this would be the next step. This would bring us a little further and deeper into love, into kindness, into the soul. I could actually follow the path. No, we don't do that. No. We wouldn't do that because that would mean that we'd have to, in our minds, leave behind all of our mischief and our compulsions and our beliefs and our theories and all the crazy stuff we so enjoy and think is essential to our life. So there you are. It is all about, for most of us, living unconsciously, and we can't think without a thought. I'm saying to you, you don't need to think. All you need to do is breathe. Believe it or not, a lot of it is in the breath. I gotta go. I could go on. Anyway, thank you for your beautiful question, Jill. I'm very grateful. Please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment or question, just email me at greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire.org. I'm out of here. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me. Namaste.